Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Vashi on this Thursday. I said it was Friday. I was getting ahead of myself. It's Thursday. Most of us have tomorrow off. It's Good Friday. It's a stat. Time for our daily debrief panel. Robert Benzie, the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. Marika Walsh, the Senior Political Reporter for the Globe. And Laura Stone, Queen's Park Reporter for the Globe and Mail. Welcome to you all, Robert and Laura. You are not face-to-face with me.
Unlucky for us. We'd rather be with you and Marika in Ottawa.
Of course. And Marika is in studio. It's great to see you.
It's so good to be here.
Excellent. Face-to-face, not on social media. Let's start there. Back when Robert Benzie was talking to his friends in high school in the 1960s on a rotary phone, the world has shifted. Rob, what do you make of this? We just had the Toronto board on, and I was asking, you know, like, what are you going to do with the money if you win? And they talked about hiring resources. We're talking about the massive lawsuit all these boards have launched against Meta. It seems very much to me like they're very, very late. It's several years out, and they're trying to shove a lot back into the bottle. And I don't know what they're trying to achieve. Maybe they're going to win. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly grabs headlines. It's on our front page today, Graham. But it's the problem is, you're right, the toothpaste is out of the tube. And what I worry about in these types of situations is this a way for school boards to just try to do the job that parents should be doing? I mean, look, we should control what our kids, if they're underage, are doing on Snapchat, TikTok, and Instagram, and so on. But I don't love the state trying to tell us how to parent in this way. I don't know. It just seems a little intrusive.
If they get
money, then great. Then they can, you know, solve some of the problems in classrooms and solve the problems always, like teaching children how to read and to write and add and subtract.
Marika, they're using the tobacco analogy and the healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
This has similar costs to the education system. Mm-hmm. It might, but I guess to Rob's point, who's to blame for that? Is it the user, the kids, the parents?
Well, no, because I think the point is, based on things like what we saw from the Facebook whistleblower, and I apologize, I'm forgetting her name right now. I think it's Frances. But she has, you know, been on Vashi's show several times and really been all over world media, including speaking to Congress, about how these companies develop their platforms to make them addictive.
Yes.
To make it so that they are hooked in. So if it is about that, then it is in some ways beyond your individual control, and you are at a disadvantage, even if you are trying to control it. And is it too late? Yes, I think that's clear. But I think that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing anything. I think we see the EU doing it. I think we see the federal government again trying with their online harms bill. This is all sort of tackling the similar problem in different ways and looking at different angles of it. I think there's no doubt it's fundamentally changed how things work. I don't have kids, but I would deeply worry about what my kids would be dealing with and grappling with if I did have kids.
Well, I mean,
with them.
And yeah, and the plus, Laura, of course, is they have their friends at their fingertips, you know, at all times, which is extraordinary from my time in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has negative implications as well. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg standing up and apologizing to those families in Congress who had. Their kids had committed suicide partially because of bullying on social media. I think Marika's right. It feels like there's a reckoning coming, and are the boards getting in on something that we're all going to have to deal with in some way, where big tech is going to have to pay for that addictive nature of the algorithm?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting case, and you know, this is not happening just in Canada. Mm-hmm. It's happening in the United States as well, and I think, you know, first and foremost, the school boards and the teachers are trying to draw attention, as Rob said, just to how much this is impacting the classroom, how distracting it is, how difficult it is to teach in this environment. And so whether this goes somewhere or nowhere, I think they've achieved that, where they're kind of, you know, taking the nuclear option here by launching this legal action, just to say, look, like it's becoming out of control, it's untenable, and it's impacting kids. It's obviously not just a school board problem. It's a family problem. It's a parent problem. It's the kids themselves, as you mentioned. And as Marika said, governments are trying to also reckon with this and how they can how they can moderate what's happening online. It's clearly a problem. I think it's not something that only one facet can solve either. And I think there does have to be a pretty big parental involvement piece here too. But, you know, school boards aren't even able to stop the kids from using their phones in the classrooms. I mean, from what I understand, individual teachers have kind of different rules, but I have a stepdaughter who's in high school, and you can pretty much get in touch with her all day, all hours of every day when she's in class. So, which has its advantages, but also its disadvantages too. So
leave the phone at the door, I think, is unrealistic now. It's unrealistic for us. Like, I convinced myself it's because I'm working, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the Globe and Mail or the Star, maybe in that order. And sometimes CTV News, just kidding. But, you know, really, I find myself, like the other day, you know, I'm looking at barking dog videos because I clicked on one, and then I'm laughing at them, you know, and before I know it, I look up and it's 45 minutes later. Rob, do you buy the, and I'm going to get each of you to weigh in on this, do you buy the analogy, if they're so addictive, nicotine and healthcare and smoking? Is this as bad as that? Do you buy that argument that the boards are making?
I mean, I can see the argument. I don't know if I buy it, Graham. I mean, to Laura's point, if teachers said, look, I don't want using phones, leave your phone in a basket at the door when you come into class, then they're not going to be on TikTok and during class. So I think, I don't know. I mean,
more on the
I don't
choice
think
side.
It's quite the same.
Yeah, more on the choice side thing.
Yeah. I don't think it's the same as smoking in the bathroom. Although in the budget, in Ontario's budget the other day, they're putting vape detectors in bathrooms so kids can't vape in bathrooms. So taking all the fun out of life.
Benzie gets the award.
Wow, Benzie.
Yeah, he gets the award for bringing up Motley Crue.
Benzie thinks students should be vaping and TikToking at the same time
in the bathroom or in the library.
In the class, yeah.
I'm sure somebody knows, and somebody else who understands how algorithm works knows. I do not know. But as you said, 45 minutes, we've all been there where all of a sudden an hour is gone. So it's something, and it has lots of benefits and it has lots of drawbacks.
Yeah. And is it $4.5 billion worth, Laura, and untold money to the – I asked her, what are you going to do with the money if you win? And she said,
pay the lawyers
and then hire a bunch of people to help the kids. That strikes me as a bit naive. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't think this is going to be wrapped up anytime soon, right? I don't think we're going to, you know, I don't think this is something that's going to work its way through the court system in you know, by the end of the school year, just put it that way. This is sort of, it's an interesting debate over sort of like, you know, state responsibility versus personal responsibility. Are these teachers talking about just what happens in individual classrooms, or how this phenomenon is impacting kids even when they go home and they have homework? I know there's even some rules being put in place for chat GPT now too. Kids have to get their homework done, English homework done in class now, because their teachers are so worried about AI and automated devices doing their work for them. So there's all kind of these interesting debates about technology. I think that this is sort of trying to draw attention to that debate and the challenges, whether, you know, it's realistic in the sense of it'll actually move forward or anything will be paid out. I'm not sure there's a precedent for that, but I think it's bringing up a pretty interesting debate about what's going on in the school systems right now.
Okay. When we come back, second section, I want to talk about the budget, remind everybody who Doug Small was, and in terms of what is happening with the federal government. And I want to finish this section with this text from Toronto, and the text board's lighting up about parents should have control here. I think this nails it. This is from Toronto. Their algorithms will feed you more and more of what you spend time looking at. So if you look at anti-Semitic or anti-Muslim, or for that matter, football or hockey content, then they present more and more of it to max your time on the platform. They inundate you with what you think they think you want and spend the most time viewing. This snowballs eventually to the exclusion of other points of view or subjects. That's what they need to stop doing. The problem is that's their business model. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Vashi. We're back in just a moment.
To public and nonprofit child care providers. This funding will be through CMHC, a common sense approach that will help child care be developed alongside housing, helping us build livable, accessible communities. We've funded 100,000 spaces so far, and we're going to keep going.
All right. That is the prime minister in Surrey announcing his budget 2 weeks before, and there's going to be multiple announcements, except for they're taking Good Friday off. Get everybody's take on this. Marika, we remember I was joking about the leak to Global years ago and the RCMP getting involved. And the Liberals clearly feeling, hey, we're not going to put up, we're not going to do this charade anymore. We're just going to send it all out beforehand. Is this desperation? Is this smart? What do you think?
Well, it might be both.
Right.
I think that they clearly, since December, with the new director of communications, Max Valleycat, have had a much sharper communications plan. It has not worked in all instances. It is far from perfect. But I think in this case, they are doing the opposite of a budget day where you have 1,000 stories on one day come out and just crush everything and hide it and sort of bury it all. And instead, they're dripping it out in advance. Yesterday's announcement, in relative terms, quite small, but it right. got a lot of coverage. Today's also not that huge. It's a childcare program that already exists. They're expanding, but it's getting a lot of coverage. So I think the drip, 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 drip is maybe going to help them in the lead up to the budget in 2 weeks. Although I will note they have not yet passed the fall economic statement and they're about to table a budget. So they might want to get their House of Commons in order while they're doing the
They're
announcement.
Not going to do that then, are they? They're not going to do an, they wouldn't do an economic statement and then a budget or
well, no,
the
economic statement is from fall, but they right. haven't passed it yet. It's right. still like, it's still making its way through committee.
Oh.
So there's a getting few ahead things of that aren't, there's a few things that aren't quite in order, but they are getting their announcements out.
Well, the other thing too, Rob, is standing up at 4 o'clock. The tradition of that is the closed markets. And a lot of these things don't move markets. They're political things, right? So why not just,
yeah.
I wonder if other governments are going to do the same thing.
And they are doing, they have been doing the same thing. And it's not even really a new thing. The Harper government did the same thing when the Tories were in power federally. I mean, the Liberals here did it under McGuinty and Wynne.
Right.
And they're doing it under Ford, where they have their best announcements sometimes, you know, beforehand. I mean, in a way, we had a budget here in Ontario on Tuesday. Laura and I were covering that. And there was no news except for this massive $9.8 billion deficit that was supposed to be a $200 million surplus. So in a weird way, sometimes not having anything, any good news in the budget is bad. So I would expect that Chrystia Freeland will be saving at least one nugget for April 16th, because otherwise you're going to have this situation where it's just everyone. You know what reporters are like. We're a whiny, grumbly bunch. We'll be like, "Oh, there's nothing new
there's
in
nothing
here.
Nothing new
this
except
sucks.
For the cop helicopters, and that's not big enough." Laura, what do you make of this, Laura? This strategy?
I think this is sort of the Doug Ford School of Budget Communications. We've seen this play out just recently in Ontario, where like Rob said, they're releasing their kind of the best in their minds announcements from the budget, trying to get the most attention and most bang for their buck and repetition, right? Because it is a bit of an onslaught on budget day, right? People only have, and by people, I mean the public only has the capacity to read and see so much. Mm. And so there's, you know, it's always a pretty hefty document. There's lots of things in there. And so the government's trying to get their message far and wide before it comes out. With the way the Trudeau government's been struggling, I think it makes sense to pre-position this. But there is a risk, right? Because if you get all those quote-unquote good news announcements out early, people are digging in for other stuff in the budget. So they do have to hold back those nuggets. But it has become a very common communications exercise to make these pre-announcements and pump up your own government, yeah. government's budget before it's even released. And like you said, Graham, this used to be shrouded in secrecy, and budget leaks were very uncommon or taken very, very seriously. And they don't seem to be anymore.
Michael Wilson standing up in the House of Commons in a rush, Doug Small being visited by RCMP, a global news bureau chief. It seems kind of quaint now. Marika, you talked about desperation. Let's talk about that. A lot of people on the text board, shockingly, are not Liberal supporters. They think that this is the shockingly.
Only about 24% of them, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, even let alone talk radio. The ship is going down, and I've heard that, you know what, they're going to go down swinging if they do go down. I'm assuming, have you heard the same thing?
Yeah, I think it depends on who you ask if they are actually going down. Some certainly think that's the inevitable fate, which is the inevitable fate of all governments. It's just a matter of when.
Right.
The liberals around Justin Trudeau are very hopeful that with a year and a half before the next election, things can change and things can move. And their focus on younger generations in this budget tee up is targeted at that in particular, because that is really where they've lost a lot of the support to the conservatives. It's very shocking to see, you know, this is not Stephen Harper's path to victory. This is a totally different path to victory where Gen Z and millennials are backing the conservatives. It's not something that we would have expected 10 years ago. And it's not something that clearly the liberals expected, because they're stuck scrambling to reverse it.
Well, and they're all getting ripped off. They're angry, right? Like, they're ripped off. Like Freeland talked about, they feel, you know, she's right. Like, it's not fair, you know, and 2015, it wasn't like this. And now it is.
Yeah. And they're trying to make those changes. The question is whether those changes have any real impact that people see before the next election.
Yeah. Rob, what's the biggest thing he has to do in this pre-roadshow of the budget if he's going to turn things around? I mean, Trudeau.
Well, he has to leave. I mean, frankly, I mean, he won't do that, but he needs to. The only way they're going to get out of this death spiral that they're in is for him to leave and move on. And the cautionary tale, Graham, and Laura and Marika lived through this as I did, was Kathleen Wynne's Liberals here in Ontario.
Oh, I think we lost Rob.
And if she had left a bit earlier, because it people just get irrational, and they have this weird irrationality about Trudeau right now, just as they did about Premier Wynne. And I think it's very hard to dissuade them from that. So if the Liberals got a new leader, they could say, look, this is change. It's change you can trust. You said you wanted something different. We've given you something different. I don't think there's a path with him there.
But if they do that, it could be Kim Campbell.
Well, that's the danger for sure. Yeah, that's the danger. Or it could be Kathleen Wynne, who left after Dalton McGuinty. Remember that in 2011, 2012? When she came in 2013, a lot of people said, oh, the Liberals are finished. She won an election in 2014. So lots of things can happen.
I've asked you both this before, or all of you this before, Laura. I want to come to you. Is there like lots of city announcements here, right? They've got to keep these cities, because if they lose one, Montreal, Toronto, 905, or Vancouver, they're done. Do you think these kinds of announcements, daycare, renters, can do that?
Yeah, I mean, cities and suburbs are sort of what matter here, right? And these are issues that people care about. It's what people are talking about. I have a child in daycare right now, and there's a lot of staffing problems. The turnover is really high. They can't seem to meet the demand. The wait lists are crazy.
Huge. It's not working, right? It's not working.
I mean, you can create all this. You can create all the spaces you want, but you need people to work there, right? And just like everywhere else, wages aren't keeping up with inflation. The cost of living is really high in the greater Toronto area where I live. It's not an attractive job prospect for a lot of people anymore. Well, if you can have all these daycares, but if you have no one to work there, you can't sustain it. So I think the problem here is immediate relief. Are these rental changes going to drop rents by $500 or $600 next month? Probably not. And that's what people are looking for. So, you know, there are policies that I think show that the Liberals do get what people are concerned with and talking about. But the problem is, will they offer any immediate relief that people are looking for?
Yeah, but the other parties aren't going to be lowering rent by $500, $600 either.
Right, but they're allowed to say
exactly.
We can make it better.
Look, those shortages in childcare, or shortages in hospitals, or shortages in family care centers. Can't get a doctor, can't get teachers. You know what I mean? It's a cross
No, you guys
problem.
Are wrong. Isn't AXA tax going to solve all of our problems? Come on. I'm so cynical, you guys.
We got to go. This has been great as always. Marika, Rob, and Laura, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys.